Okay? That's one opinion. Of course, I have to tell you that there's another opinion in Gemara and Bava Basra, for example, about this, wherein they say that not so. That Moshe Rabbeinu actually wrote it, but he wrote it bedema. He wrote it with tears in his eyes. In other words, he had the inspiration and God dictated to him these last eight psukim, just as they had dictated to him the other psukim. And he did so, you know, with a tear in his eyes. So that's not mentioned over here. It's simply, they mention over here the opinion that says that the last eight psukim were written, you know, by Joshua. All right. So that's one opinion. The Chad Omer, and another one says that where it says Vayichtav Yeshua is Hadvarim Ha'Eleh, you know, B'Sefer Torah Tzedekim, it means that Orei Miklot, he wrote about the cities of refuge. Okay, so they say Bishlam Olam Adom Achei Psukim Ches Psukim, in you know, in accordance with the opinion that says that Joshua wrote the last eight psukim of the Torah. Ainu Dichsiv, this accords with the fact that it's written over there B'Sefer Torah Tzedekim, right, in the book of the Torah of God. Elamando Omar in Niklot, but in accordance with the opinion that says that this is a reference instead that Joshua undertook, you know, to fulfill the command of the Orim Niklot, say my B'Sefer Torah Tzedekim, then what is the relevance of, you know, in the book of the Torah of God? So this is how he explains it. It says, "Vayichtav Yehoshua," Joshua wrote "Bisifro," in his own book, namely in the book of Joshua, he wrote "Es Hadborim Ho'ele," these things, "Aksubim B'Sefer Torah Tzedekim," which were written in the book of the Torah of God. Okay.
I don't understand.
Huh?
But
no.
If he wrote it in his own book.
He wrote it in his own book, in the book of Joshua.
How does he take it? He says
he wrote in his own book the words which Joshua found in the Torah of God.
Okay.
That's the answer. Okay? So he included it also. All right. Now there's another machlekes. Machlekes this time is Sefer Shetofru Bepishta, or Shetforu Bepishta. You can read one or the other. At any rate, what it means is a Sefer Torah which has been sewn together with flax. Now, you've all seen what a Sefer Torah looks like, so you know that, you know, when they write a Sefer Torah, they write gilyonis. In other words, they have a sheet of parchment, right, upon which they could write, you know, a certain number of columns and so on. And then there's the next one, the next gilyon, and so that's the way they work. And what do? In order to make it in Sefer Torah, you have to sew it together. But what do they use? They use sinews, what we call gidim in Hebrew, okay? This is what they use, okay? These are sinews, and of course, the sinews themselves have to come from what? From a kosher animal.
Right.
But, apparently, in the time of the Talmud, there were some who felt that it is permissible to use, let's say, cotton or flax or something like that in order to tie the pieces of parchment together. So this is what the argument is about right now. Okay? So Sefer Shetforu Bepishta, in which, you know, they had sewn it together with flax. So Pligei Bo Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir. This time it's Machlekes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. You see, there are three Machlekes that we have over here. In each case, Rabbi Yehuda is arguing with the others. But, you know, he has different people with whom he argues because it's a different point of law. All right, what is the point of law right now? So Chad Oimer Kosher, one of them says that if you sewed the various pieces of parchment together with flax, then it's still kosher. The Chad Oimer, the other one says, posel. It's invalid. So, the Mandom Apostle, in accordance with the opinion of the authority who says that it is invalid, Dichsiv,
it's
based on a posek. And what is the posek? Posek, in this particular case, the end of Parsha Bo, you find it. You know, Kaddishli called the Chor, Petra called Rechem, the Israel, and so on and so forth, right? Where we have two inyanim that are mentioned over there. One inyan is the fact that we are to observe Pesach in order to celebrate the fact that this is the holiday in which God made us free, and he took us out of Egypt, right? And the other inyan is the use of tefillin as a sign in order to indicate the freedom and God's power that we possess.
Huh?
Yeah. Hmm. That's why these two passages of Kaddishli called Bechor and the Hoyo Keviachor are two of the four parchments that we find in both in the Shalyan and also in the Shalrosh. There are four sections of the Torah in there. And the four sections are found both in the Tefillin Shalrosh and the Tefillin Shalyan, but there is a difference in the way it is arranged. The Tefillin Shalyan consists of four the Tefillin Shalyan consists of one parchment. Tefillin Shel Yad has one parchment in which all four of the sections, you know, that mention tefillin, the other two, of course, are the Shema and Behoyim Shemola, are to be found, you know. And the other one in the Shel Rosh, we have each section written separately and placed in its own little compartment. This is why, you know, the Shel Rosh is split into four compartments. All you have to do is take a look at your Shel Rosh and see that this is the way it's done. And if you were to open it up on the inside, you would see that you have Shema, and you have Ohyam Shema, and you have Kaddishli, and then you have Ohyam Kiviyachol. Okay? Not necessarily in the order in which I gave you.
Okay.
About that, there's a whole machlekes between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam.
Yeah.
And this is why many Hasidim have the habit, you know, that...
They're on two sets as well.
Right, they put on two separate sets. They don't want to get into an argument between Rashi, whose opinion we accept, and Rabbeinu Tam, who they also want to satisfy. Okay.
Is the difference in the Rosh or in the Yad?
No, it's in the Rosh.
It's all in the Rosh. So the
right,
Yad,
but even in the Yad it could be because the order is also different.
Well, there is.
Yeah, there is a difference in the order in which you place it. That's exactly what the problem is. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, in reference to the tefillin, was to say, it's written over there, the tziv, right, leman tia teres ad Hashem b'ficha, in order that the Torah of God shall be in your mouth. Literally, that's what I'm saying, okay? So, we know, of course, that, you know, we are talking about tefillin, okay? But, we say that the iskash, kol haTorah kulo letefillin, after all, you have four little sections in the tefillin taken from the Torah, right? So therefore, the Torah as a whole also is subject to similar laws as the tefillin. Okay? Now, if that's the case, then this law of Torah HaShem B'Ficho would apply. What does it mean, Torah HaShem B'Ficho? It means that whatever goes into your mouth, right? So this is permissible to use as parchment for writing the tefillin, okay? In other words, would it be permissible to write a Sefer Torah on pigskin? The answer is no, right, because it's not a kosher animal, so we don't use pigskin for that purpose, okay?
Right.
By the way, when I was working in the seminary library, I hate to tell you, a half century ago, no more, that time, this is a very interesting work. I was the assistant to, the curator over there of the rare
book
manuscript room and so on. And part of my job was to identify fragments and, you know, decide where they came. So he showed me that here was a Sefer Torah that dated back, I don't know, maybe about 800, 900 years. And it was written actually on cowhide, which of course complies. We always write it, you know, on sheepskin parchment, but nevertheless, simply it says Torah HaShem B'Ficho, so it could be used, you see, that's the point. But the
cowhide
thing,
would
know,
be
guess,
much more.
Yeah, I remember it was very brownish in appearance, and
but it stood up all
oh, it stood up. Stood up all those hundreds of years.
The ink was still on it. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I could read it absolutely. I have to tell you, of course, also there were certain things that they had that came from what is known as the Cairo Geniza. you know what the kinesis is. Kinesis means that, you know, when you take, like, say, you know, books that become old or something like that, our practice is, of course, to take them to the Beis Salem and to bury them. But very often, and this was particularly true of one of the synagogues in Cairo, that they had a separate room over there in which they would put old books and old manuscripts and things like that. Of course, when I talk about a book, remember, I mean, books in those days were also were written on parchment or papyrus.
Before
or
the advent of printing.
Nothing printed. I mean, this was all handwritten, or the whole deal.
Of course.
So, and then for some reason or other, I guess the shul either was not used or the room was kept closed, whatever it was. But the climate in Cairo is such that it preserved these things very well. So in the late 1800s and the 1900s, discovery was made of the Cairo Geniza, and they found innumerable things that had been hidden over there, which shed a tremendous amount of light upon, you know, the time of the Gaonim, the time of, the Arabic period, you know, when Jews were living in Cairo at that time. You know, for example, the Rambam. They found a manuscript of the Rambam over there in his own handwriting. So this may possibly have dated from that, although I'm not so sure about that. But naturally, in the manuscript room, they had special climatic conditions, and then this was also put, I remember, inside a case with a glass cover on it and so on. So that way
preserved.
It was preserved much better. So Torah Sadashem Beficho means that what the Torah has to be written on has to be from a kosher animal. Okay, the hide of a kosher animal.
That's one condition.
Right, that's one of the conditions. Needless to say, there are many other rules concerning it. All right. So we say Yiskash Kol Torah Kulo L'Tfilin, right? We compare the entire Torah to the Tfilin, the passage of Silken Tfilin. And then, in what way do we compare? So he says, Mat Tfilin, just as in the case of Tfilin, Halacha L'Moshel Misinai, the Tofran Begidin, just as in the case of Tfilin, there is an oral tradition going back from Moshe Rabbeinu at Mount Sinai to the people of Israel. In other words, Rabbeinu Shalom himself dictated these oral laws to Moshe Rabbeinu, even though we don't find it written in the Torah. This is what we call a halacha l'Moshe Sinai. In other words, it's an oral tradition given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Mount Sinai, and it's very, very authoritative as far as we're concerned. So what is this particular halacha l'Moshe Sinai? It is the Tofrim Begidin, that they are to be sewn together with Gidin, in other words, with sinews. So I've called L'Tofrim Begidin. So likewise, the entire Torah has to be sewn together with Gidin. Okay? The Edoch, so now we come to the other authority who disagreed, right? Namely, Ki Iskash, so what do you do? So he says, Ki Iskash, he says, no, you say that it has to be compared, that the comparison between Tfilin and the Sefer Torah applies to every rule. I say it applies only to certain specific rules. What do you do, for example, with the business, you know, Torah Sar Hashem Beficha? So he says, this is the Mutar Beficha. Right. This is to tell us that the parchment, or the hide upon which it has to be written, has to be from a kosher animal. But the Hil Chaysav, Lo Yiskish. But as far as every single halacha, there isn't, there's no comparison. The truth of the matter is, that while most of the rules apply, as for example you have to have shirtut, as we would say, there should be ruled lines, you know, so that, you know, the letters will come out good, but first of all, in the tefillin itself, in reality, we don't really use gittin. We don't.
It's usually one piece of parchment.
It's one piece of parchment in the shel-yad, right. The others are all individual ones.
Yeah, they go into different compartments.
Right. But the comparison would be true, for example, as far as the makeup of the ink that is used. That has to be the same. And also what grade of parchment to be used. Because there are different grades, you know. Mezuzahs are also written. They're written on parchment.
Mm.
Yet, the grade of parchment of a mezuzah is not necessarily as good a grade as for a Sefer Torah.
Well, you couldn't get it into a cycle if you wrote.
Yeah, well, it's not only that. I'm thinking the fact, you see, that there are, you know, the parchment itself is split into what is closer to the animal itself and what is more on the outside, and so there's a difference in quality between one side of the skin and the other. So that when you split it and you use it, what you use for a mezuzah is really its second grade, so to speak, parchment. But naturally, if you have, you know, an expert sofer, he's going to try to use a better one, and so that the letters will come out better and be more permanent and so on. So that's what you're paying for when you pay for a more expensive mezuzah. Yeah. Omer Rav. So now Rav comes and he says, Chazinim lehu letfilin leveich habibi. He says, I saw, literally we have seen, tefillin in the house of my beloved Habibi, because Habibi, you know, is it's Hebrew, it's Arabic, but another version in Hebrew is the word Dodi.
My beloved, yeah.
Yeah, my beloved. But, you know, Dodi could also be translated as my uncle. So, in other words, what he's saying is, I saw tefillin in the house of my uncle, happened to be Rabbi Chiya, if I'm not mistaken, the tefirei bekitno, that they were sewed together with cotton. But nevertheless, even though that's to say, even though I can testify to this, what I saw, nevertheless, halacha does not follow it. Instead, as we know, how does it have to be sewn together? It has to be with gittin.
Yeah.
All right, take a look at the Rashi for a few minutes, and then we'll start with the new Mishnah. Okay? All right, let's start on the fourth line, the middle over there. It says, "Bipnei Shashihim," because he delayed doing the job. Okay? Shelo hifrisham leyacha shecholku miyad ad shenem alo mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, you know, he had to wait, first of all, for what? Joshua had to wait in order to distribute the land to the various Shevatim. But he should have immediately, right after that, as soon as he assigned the various places, right, so in that case, he should have immediately set them aside. But he didn't do so, and so the Rebbeinu Shalalem had to give him a charge and say, you know, say, hey, Yehoshua, time.
Straighten up.
Okay, right. Kligebor, says Rashi Befei Rusha, there's a machlekes in connection with what is the meaning of the high crow of the pasuk Marcos Av Yeshua B'Sefer Torah? What did he write in the Sefer Torah? So Chadamah Shmoyin Pesukim, right? In other words, Mevayoma Shom Moshe, from the place where it begins and Moshe died over there at Sefer to the very end of Sefer Devarim. V'Chad Omar, and the other authority said B'Farshes or Emiklo to Omer Sheksuva B'Sefer Yeshua, that refers to the section dealing with cities of refuge that we find written in the book of Joshua. And then, of course, the Mantia Torah Hashem, he says, "V'reishit ikra," the beginning of that pasuk, "Mishtoi b'tfilin," talks about tfilin. The Yizkash Hocha, Torah l'tfilin. And so here we find that Torah is compared to tfilin. So the question is, in what way? So we said, because in reference to the Giddin, for example. But the other one says, no, ki Yizkash l'muta b'ficha. The comparison is only in reference to what can come into your mouth. Tchsiv b'haikro b'ficha, because, you know, it's written over there, b'ficha, in your mouth. And what does b'ficha mean? What does it mean? The Torah of God should be in your mouth? Of course, we can understand figuratively what it means. Figuratively means that, you know, we should always be talking about ideas of Torah and so on, right? But that's not the literal, I mean, let's say, they take it more literally in the sense that what goes into your mouth, minamuto b'ficha, right? It has to be from what is permissible to you to eat, you know, to enter your mouth, to eat. She'ein nechtovim al or behemot tameya, that not allowed to be written on the skin of an impure animal. The hilchoy sehen, but he says, and others, a matter of halacha, says the dover sheinu kosev b'Torah of a tefillin gufayhu lo gam rinan lei. But the things, you know, which are not written in the Torah or tefillin, you know, the actual wording, so lo gam rinan lei, then you cannot learn one from another. Elamei halacha l'meishem sinai, but you learn only the rules concerning whether it's the writing of a Torah or the rules concerning tefillin, this is an oral teaching of Moshe, you know, given to Moshe at Mount Sinai, okay, right?
Yeah.
And he says, Lo yalfina behekesha, if you are dealing with the halacha of Moshe Sinai, you cannot use that as a basis for learning something through a comparison between one thing and another. That you can't.
You're using that as an example.
Right, right. In other words, you cannot use it as a logical example, say, if this is so, this is also so. You see, you can't do it, because the halacha of Moshe Sinai is only for one specific issue and not for anything else. Okay? The Vei Chabibi says, Dodi. Dodi means Achi Abba, right? In other words, my father's brother, the who, Rabbi Chiya. Who is Rabbi Chiya? Alright, now the Mishnah continues. And it says, Echad Moshuach B'Shem Nabishcha, the Echad HaMehubbe B'Begodim, the Echad She'ova M'Mshichu Sam. Okay? It makes no difference whether the Kohen, alright, of course we have to explain the union first of all. It's written concerning, you know, the person is sentenced to live in the Ir HaMiklat, right? One of the six cities of refuge, right? He's not allowed to leave that city, we said. Ad Mos HaKohen HaGodol. That's what it's written, until the death of the Kohen Godol, okay?
Then he's allowed to leave.
Then he's allowed to leave, right. So.
But he can still
No, the Goel Adonai, no, he's not allowed to. That would be murdered.
If he comes out of the city?
Because he's protected, yeah.
If he comes out of the city?
Yeah, because he's protected. It's a kapora, so to speak. Okay. The death of the Kohen Godol serves as an atonement for what he did,
right.
And therefore it's like getting executive clemency or something like that, a pardon, okay? So, then it would be murder if the Goel Adonai would kill him. But that's a particular point. All right.
We'll have to pray for the
we're going to see. It's exactly what the Mishnah is concerned about. Very good, Herb. All right. Now we also have to say that there are different Kohanim Gedolim. Okay? And I don't mean that one of them is Al or Menachem Kahan of blessed memory. But what I mean by that is the fact that first of all, in the days of the first temple, they still had what they called the Shemen HaMishcha, anointing oil. Aaron himself, he had to be anointed by Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, when he became Kohen Gadol, right? So from that point on, whenever it was necessary to have a new Kohen Gadol, then they anointed him with the Shemen HaMishcha. It could be a king who anointed him, it could be a prophet who anointed him, but he had to be anointed, okay? So that was in existence as long as they had the Shemen HaMishcha in the days of the first temple. No, not just the Mishcha, but in the days of the first temple, it still existed, okay? Now, what happened in the days of the second temple? The days of the second temple, they no longer had the Shemen HaMishcha. Was gone. They buried a lot of things when they saw that the Babylonians were coming, and these things still remain buried to this very day. Okay? One of them would be the Aron Kodesh. The Aron Kodesh that existed in the you know, first and then the Mishkan, then in the.
Really?
Yeah, right. It was buried because King Yoshio did not want the Aron Kodesh to.
That would be with the original service of Dibros then.
Yeah, right. So he didn't want it to fall into the hands of the Babylonians, so it was buried. And we don't know exactly where it is, although there are theories. Somebody claims that he knows where, on the grounds of the Beis HaMikdash, if we dug, he said he was sure that we would find these things. But needless to say, the Arabs aren't going to let him dig there anyway.
Right.
But, by the way, one of the interesting things is that nowadays in Eretz Yisrael, you go to Yerushalayim, they have been tunneling the, you know, where the Kosel Ma'arovi is on top, which after all occupies only a relatively small area, and they've tunneled for many, many feet, goes for blocks and blocks underneath. They found the original foundation stones, stones that date back to King Solomon, and that came back to the time of the early period of the Second Temple, and of Herod's Beis HaMikdash, and so on, because, you know, the tendency is that they pile one thing on top of another.
Yeah, it's so, right on top of the ruins.
Right. So when I was in Israel, last Purim, I had a chance to go to take a look. I went with Michael, my son, and we had a chance to take a look and see what it's like. So it's next time you go to Israel, arrange. There's a yeshiva in the old city called Ateret Kohanim. That yeshiva is meant for younger Bochrim who are Kohanim to study the various rules and regulations in the Talmud and Pesachim and so on concerning the, you know, how the Kohanim are expected to officiate in the Beis HaMikdash, in the hope that one day we'll have the Beis HaMikdash again, and then they'll be able to, to assume the role that the Kohanim have to assume in the Beis HaMikdash. So they are the sponsors of this tour. And it's very inexpensive. It was 10 shkolim. No, 10 shkolim, it's about $3.50 or something like that. So, nishkefela. You go, it's well worth it. Okay, so in the meantime, let me promote that everybody should go to Yerushalayim and visit. All right.
Galavai.
Right. All right. Now, in the days of the second Beis HaMikdash, what did they do for the Kohen Gadol? So the answer is, he was no longer anointed with the Sheven HaMishkan, because as we said, that Sheven HaMishkan disappeared. But he still had the distinction of what? That he had to be dressed in the 8 garments that the Kohen Gadol had to wear.
That's in the Chumash.
Yeah, right, exactly. This we have the Chumash. You know, Kohen, Hedyot, an ordinary Kohen has 4 garments that he has to wear, but the Kohen Gadol has also 8. Additional. He has to wear 8. Because he wears such things as the tzitz, which is, you know, a plate on his head upon which is written the words Kodesh Lad Hashem. It's made out of gold, and then he had to wear an ephod, and with the Urim and Thummim and so on and so forth. So that these things the Kohen Gadol had to wear, so we say that he was the Meruba Begadim. Meruba Begadim means that he wore the many garments. In other words, as compared to the ordinary Kohen that wore 4, he had to wear the 8 garments of the Kohen Gadol. And then the Torah also speaks about what happens to a Kohen Gadol, right? And let's say the Kohen Gadol, for some reason or other, becomes disqualified. He's no longer able to fulfill his function. So, what do you do with him? You're going to send him out to pasture? So, the answer is that you still give him all the honor and respect and everything else due to such a Kohen Gadol. As we say, he is passed away from his job. He's no longer doing the job of being the Kohen Gadol. But nevertheless, you still have to show him the respect due to a Kohen Gadol. Okay, so he still remains a Kohen Gadol. You know, it's like sort of analogous to, let's say, a former president of the United States. We know that we still honor them and we give them Secret Service and a good pension and things like that and so on.
Unfortunately.
Emeritus.
Yes, right. All right. So, the Mishnah now says, Echad Meshuach B'Shemen HaMishka makes a difference whether the Kohen Gadol is of the type that we said, that he was anointed with the special oil. In other words, the anointing oil, which was the case in the days of the first temple, or the Echad HaMeruba Begadim, or makes a difference, maybe this was the Kohen Gadol who officiated in the second Beis HaMikdash, who was distinguished from the other Kohanim because of the fact that he wore the many garments, the 8 garments, the Echad Shavah Mimeshichuso, or makes no difference, maybe if he was a Kohen who was no longer able to continue in the office of being a Kohen Gadol. He's a retired Kohen Gadol, all right? At any rate, if any of them should die, we'll see, this is going to be a machloikis afterwards, but over here the implication is that if any of them should die, then mazirin is harotzeach. They cause permission to be given that the person who murdered inadvertently is permitted to return to his own hometown again. Okay, he's permitted to leave the Yir HaMiklot and go there. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says that Af Mishuach Milchoma Machziv Sovitzeach. He says there's also another Kohen who is mentioned. This time it's mentioned, if you remember, in Parsha Shoftim, in the Sefer Devarim, where they speak about the fact that what happens when you go out to war. All right, so at that time, then it's written, that the Kohen has to officiate, and, he has to ask the following questions and so on, to find out. If you're a coward, go home. If you just got married, go home, and so on and so forth. And also to give words of encouragement to the soldiers, that Al Yerach Levavchem, right? Don't be frightened, let your hearts, be melt away, but, Al Tiruvi, Al Tachbezuvi, Al Tarsum Ibnehem, don't be frightened in any way of the enemy, because of Hashem Lekechem, the Lord your God, He is with you, and so on. So, that's the job also of a Kohen. So, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it had to be a Kohen who was Meshuach Milchoma. He was especially, he says, anointed. Well, in the days of when they had this, so they could anoint him. But otherwise, it would certainly be a Kohen, who is specially appointed in order to do it. To be, so to speak, let's say, the chief chaplain in the army, okay?
How would they do it?
Yeah, how would they do it? Well, the Kohen Gadol could appoint him too, Okay? So, in that particular case, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if he should die, he would have the same footing, so to speak, as any of the other Kohanim Gedolim that we just mentioned, right? So if he should die, then in that case also, Machzir is a Ritzeach, right? That he would enable the murderer, that is the manslayer, to return home. So now the Mishnah continues with what you were concerned about, Irv. Says the Fichot, for this reason, in Moisehen Shal Kohanim, the mothers of Kohanim, of course we're talking about Kohanim Gedolim in this particular case, Misapkes Lahen Michyo Ksus, they would provide food and clothing to the people who are sentenced in the Orei HaMiklot, so that they should not be tempted to pray concerning their own children that that they should die. In other words, that they should wish, they should pray that the Kohen Gadol should die so that they could go home. All right, Rashi. Echad Kohen Moshiach B'Shem Nabishchoi says, Heim Kohanim Gedolim, Shoyu Ad Yoshio. Those were the high priests until the reign of Yoshiyahu, when, as I said before, in his days, when he saw that the Babylonians were about to, were coming, and they were threatening Israel, so they decided to bury the Shem Navishma. The Yechad Amur Begodim, he says, Heim Sheshim Shum Yoshiyahu Ve'elach. Those are the Kohanim Gedolim who, even in the days of the first temple, beginning with the latter part of the reign of Yoshiyahu, from that point on, Shenigna Sheman HaMishra, Kedamin Behorios, as we say, that the Sheman HaMishra was buried, as the Gemara says in Horios. Veshuv Lagnim Shechu Kohanim, and from that point on, no Kohanim were anointed with oil. Velo HaYisod Nikeres Kohuna Gedoilo, Bohem, so that there would be no way to recognize who is a Kohen Gadol among the other Kohanim, Ela Beribui Begodim, except for the many garments shemeshamish v'ches begodim, because he has to officiate wearing the eight garments of the Kohen Gadol. V'yechad shava mimshichuso, and the Kohen Gadol who had he had to give up being the Kohen Gadol, she'irap sul the Kohen Gadol, some invalidating blemish or something like that happened to the Kohen Gadol, the Shimesh Acher Tachtov, and someone else had to serve for him. Ushan Israfil, let's say, that the Kohen Gadol for a time was very sick and was unable to officiate. So they had to appoint the Kohen Gadol to replace him, right? So what happened? So it says, By the way, Rashi takes it a little bit different than the way I explained it, but they're both possible, okay? He says, V'shimesh achir tachta, another Kohen Gadol, you know, served as Kohen Gadol in his place, U'shenisrape Kohen, and when the original Kohen, he says, became cured, then Chuzal Avedaso, right? Then he returned to his job of being the Kohen Gadol, the Yovar Zeh, and the other guy, he says, you know, the one who had been appointed on a temporary basis, he no longer served Mimshich Huso as a Kohen Gadol. Nevertheless, we still recognize that once he is a Kohen Gadol, he's a Kohen Gadol. Okay? So, in any case, Machzunas Horetzeach B'Misoson, if they die, then they permit the manslayer to go back home. Kemoshin Emar, as it's written, he says, V'achrei Mos HaKohen HaGadol Yoshev HaRotzeach, that after the death of the Kohen Gadol, then the Rotzeach can return home. And who is the Moshuach Milchomo? So he says, Kohen HaMoshuach, a Kohen who is anointed, Lomar B'Milchomo Tzoche Milchomo, that he should declare in time of war those things that are necessary to declare in connection with war, namely, Al Yerach Levavchem, do not, you know, be afraid, don't be fearful, and so on and so forth, because God is with you, the whole inyan, and everything else that's mentioned over there in the 20th chapter of Devarim. Okay. Gemara. Menohani Mile, we're in another few minutes yet, okay, says, how do we know these, you know, where do we have a reference to it in the Torah, so to speak, you know, to say that, you know, any one of these Kohanim Gedolim would enable the Rotzeach to go back. So Omer Rav Kana, Rav Kana said, the Omer Kro, the Pasuk says, V'yoshav bo, that is the manslayer is to dwell in the city of refuge, Ad Mos HaKohen HaGadol, until the death of the Kohen HaGadol. Uchasiv, and it's also written, Ki B'yim Miklato Yeshev, Ad Mos HaKohen HaGadol, and he is to dwell in the city of his refuge till the death of the Kohen HaGadol. Uchasiv, and again it's written, V'yachrei Mos HaKohen HaGadol, and after the death of the Kohen HaGadol, you know, naturally he's permitted, you know, to return. So, notice, how many times do we find Kohen HaGadol written in this passage?
Three
of them. Alright, so that being the case, then it means it could be any one of the three categories that we mentioned, namely the one who is, you know, Meshuch B'Shem Navishcho, and the one who is Meruv Godim, and the one who Ovra Mimshichuso. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda, who said that also the Meshuach Ben Choma would also apply to him. Siv Kro, it's written concerning Siv Sarachina. There's another passage that says, Lo Shuv Lo Sheves Boris Ad Mos HaKohen, right? That to return to dwell in the land until the death of the Kohen. Now here, by the way, you notice that it doesn't say Kohen Gadol. But he says, look, the word Kohen is written over here, and it's a reference to the guy being able to go back home again. So therefore, that has to refer to a fourth category, namely, the Meshuach Melchama. But the Idach, the one who do not accept that, they only mention three. So what do? So they say, Medelok Siv HaGadol. Here it's not written HaGadol. So in that case, which Kohen are they talking about? He says, Chad Behanachu. It refers to any one of the three categories that we mentioned.
I don't understand why the connection between the freeing when the Kohen Gadol dies. I mean, that, is that right. is that a written law in the Torah?
Yeah, that it says specifically. Right.
Does so.
Yeah, right. He quoted you some of these psukim, right? Yoshabad Mos HaKohen HaGadol, right? He's to dwell there until the death of the Kohen Gadol. And then after that, Kibbutz for Yeshua the Mesakon, right? And then the Achrei Mos HaKohen HaGadol. Then what happens? He can go back again. Okay. All right. Lepichoch imosehen shel kahanim. So the Mishnah continued and said, therefore, the mothers of the kahanim, you know, they would provide food and clothing and so on and so forth, so that the exiles, you know, would not pray for the death of the Kohen Gadol, for their son's death. Tamid, it says the reason is that they don't want them to pray for this thing. Oh, Matzle, Maisei. So now the Gemara asks the question, and if they would pray, you know, these the people who are in the Ur Miklot, right, that they would pray for the death of the Kohen Gadol. So does it mean that the Kohen Gadol would die? Yeah. Don't we have a pasuk in the book of Proverbs which says, "Ketzipah lanud," like a bird that wanders, "Kidror la'uf," or like a swallow that flies, "Kein kilalas chinam." So likewise, this is a curse that has been uttered for no good reason whatever. Lo sabo, it will not happen. In other words, don't worry about you know, that it has no more substance than a bird that flies away. Okay? So, Omar, hahu sabo mipirke de rabba shemiali. So, certain elderly scholars said that listening to a drasha of Rava, I heard him say that Shehoyelahen Levakish Rachim Al Doira, that the reason why the death of the Kohen Gadol permits them to go is because the Kohen Gadol themselves, to a certain extent, are responsible. In what way? They should have begged for mercy for their generation. In other words, they should have prayed that nobody would be a murderer in their generation, right? But no bikshu, they didn't pray for these things. The Ika de Masne, and there are those who interpret it a little different, or the Ika de Amri, those who say, Kidei Sheispalu al Benehem Shelo Yamutsu, right? That they should pray, in other words, for their children. The first implication is, you know, that the first one said that they shouldn't pray for the death, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the second interpretation is that they should pray on behalf of the Kohen Gadol, that nothing bad should happen to them. So again, they ask a similar question. Tam and the Matzlu, and if they pray, Ole Matzlu, we're going to say, and if, okay, Tam and the Matzlu, right. But Ole Matzlu, I say, are we to say that if they don't pray this prayer, that the Kohen Gadol is going to die? May Havale Lemebat. What could the Kohen Gadol have done in any case, he says. Hocha minun. Here he says, the point is this. Version number two stresses the fact, in version number one we criticize the Kohen Gadol because he should have prayed on behalf of the generation, right? But the second one says, hey, the Kohen Gadol wasn't even responsible for these guys doing what they did, right? So why then, you know, should they suffer? Mm-hmm. If the other guys did it, why should the Kohen Gadol have to suffer? So the answer, you know, my Havilei Lemebat, what could he have done? He says, Hocha, he says here, meaning in Babylonia, Amrinon, we have a saying which says, it's Gemara in the Psochem, which says, Tuvya Chota, Tuvya Sin, the Zigat Mangin. But who gets the beating, who gets the Malkus? It's Zigat. Okay? Awesome, meaning there in Eretz Yisrael, Amre, they say Shchem Nosiv Mivgai Gazir, or Mavgenai or Mavgai or whatever it is. He says Shechem is the one who married. Of course, he tried. He took Dino, right? If you remember, right. We read this in the Torah this past Shabbos. And the Mavgai is the one who had to cut his penis. In other words, to circumcise himself. So, in other words, we have cases where somebody does the wrong thing, but instead of he being punished, somebody else gets punished. Okay? All right. Rashi, we'll understand this a little bit better. All right. The Yoshabad Mesakein Agadol, right? The Gemara. It says, Ho Chad, Ki Be'ir Mikloto Yeshev Ad Mesakein Agadol. Okay? One Pasuk says, yeah, Yoshabad Ad Mesakein Agadol, that's one Pasuk. Hochat, this is number one. Mm-hmm. The period is in the wrong place. I'm sure your text has the same one that I have over here, where exactly. The period has the...
After you don't know how.
Huh?
After Nochal.
After Agadol.
Agadol, rather.
Yeah, yeah. It's a mistake. It should come after Hochat. This is number one. Tibia Mikloto Yeshev Ad Moisakein Agadol. Hotre, right? Second Pasuk says that. Yachri Moisakein Agadol Yoshuva Rotseach. Right, and after the death, then the Rotseach can return. So Hot Lasa, this makes number three, right? And then it says, Shoyalehen Levakesh Rachim Al Doiron, They should have begged for mercy for the generation. So Hilchot Lav Kivilat Chinam Hi. So therefore, this is why it is not simply a vain curse, and that's why the mothers should be concerned for their own sons. Hocha Amre. Here he says Bebovil Omim. What do they say? So that's over here on the top.
Oh.
There's no Tosfos on this side.
Oh, so it's going to
right.
Continue
this
up
is
here.
All right. So Rashi continues on the top over
uh-huh.
here. Says they say Moshel Zeh Al Odom Sheloke, concerning a person who suffers Malkus Bishvil Sirchon Shel Acherim, because of the this because of the you know the wrongdoing of others. Others did it, and yet he's
he
the one against
punished.
He gets punished. And what did they say? He says, Tuv Yechata, right, Tuv Yesin, the Zigud Mangin. And Zigud is the one who gets beaten. So, what is the story over here? So Rashi explains, Meshuma Hida Minim Barvei Pesachim. It's because of this case which is mentioned in Arvei Pesachim. That's the last chapter in Pesachim. It says, Tuv Yechata, the Zigud Asid Bey, Tuv Yeh committed a sin. And Zigud testified against him, Bi Yechidi, as a sole witness. There was no second witness mm-hmm. concerning this matter. So the Nagde Rapapa Zigot. So what happened? Rapapa ordered Zigot to get Malkus. Omale. So Zigot said to him, Tuvya Chata, Tuvya sins, with Zigot Mangit, and I, Zigot, I had to get beaten up. So Meyazhoi Solomashal. Against another person. By yourself.
You have to have two
Aedim. Right. So this is the reason why he gave him Malkus. Because if you had two Aedim, it's another story. But for only one Aedim, you can't accept that. The only time that you can accept one Aedim is in certain matters concerning kashrus or marital status or something like that. But as a normal rule, certainly for any criminal offense.
How come he got Malkus?
Huh?
How come he got Malkus, huh?
The aide got Malkus.
The aide got Malkus.
Right, because he should not have gone to the court to testify
because
if he was one alone. Right.
Huh?
Well, it's not just Aiden Zomerman. No, he could have been telling the truth. But the point is, one witness should not testify.
I guess he'd beat up.
Should not testify. Not right, because you don't have enough corroborative proof, you see. That's the reason why.
Well, how does he know until he gets to the court? Whether there's more than one aide?
Well, because usually the aide would come in pairs or something like that. I have to assume that that's the you know what the procedure was.
Seems unjust that he
yeah.
gets.
Okay, but of course, unfortunately, injustice happens. And Hotsam, there, I mean, where Beres Yisrael, they say what Moshel said, namely, Shechem Nosiv and Mavgai Gozar. He says Shechem ben Chamor, right? Lo kachas Dina bas Yaakov. He took Dina, the daughter of Yaakov. V'ha'ano shalom, and he had a good time with her. She didn't have a good time, but he had a good time with her.
He raped her.
Right. Ushar b'nei ha'ir, and the other people in the city, Shechem, Shalein, Nohanu, they didn't have their enjoyment. What did they do? Molo atzmon. They circumcised themselves, right?
Right.
And it's Taru, and they suffered pain.
Burn.
So, Mavgai says, Shemesh b'nei ha'ir. Mavgai is the name of one of the people who lived in Shechem. Okay? So again, it's the case. Shechem commits the misdeed, and
so
the Mavgai is the one who has to suffer as a result.
That's it.
Right. So the same thing, with the Kohen. What could the Kohen have done? He couldn't have done anything, but he's getting stuck because of the fact that right, he's the innocent guy who's got to get it in the neck. Omale, I was so in Pirkei Devarava, Shami Ali. So this older scholar said, listening to Rava's lecture in the yeshiva, he says, I heard that they should have asked for mercy for their own generation. They didn't do so. Kihoda hu gavro, and he makes a comparison to a certain man. The Achle Arya Birachok Glossa Parse Mined Rabbi Yoshua. It's a story about a certain man who was eaten by a lion, and he lived within three parasangs Parasaig is more than a mile. Well, let's say he lived within, 5 miles, 6 miles, or something like that, okay? From Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And when this happened, Eliyahu Hanovi, who was in the habit of communicating with Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, he stopped talking to him for 3 days. In other words, he was unhappy that somebody in Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's vicinity was eaten by a lion, because what should Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi have done? So he should have prayed that such things should not happen in his area. Okay? Alright, I think I'm going to stop at this point tonight. Okay? And we shall continue from over here. Omar Rav Yehud. Alright, we are, let's see, 8 lines to the bottom, or is it 9 lines? 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 lines, okay. The middle of the 9th line from the bottom of Yud Aleph, Omar Aleph, okay? And it's a shame. We'll continue next week at 7:30. Yeah.
Okay. Huh? Getting back to the last week's Sedra.
Yeah.
Shimon Levi went and they.
Right. They killed the people. Right. Yeah. Right.
Couldn't one say that they were all? They all deserved it. Like one of these towns where the entire town was.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like the city of Sodom.
Yeah.
You could argue that way. But as you can see, according to what it says over here, they felt that the people in Shem really were not at fault. But they suffered because of their leader.
Yaakov was angry at the Yehuda for doing it, right?
Yes. Not at Yehuda, he was angry with Shimon and Levi.
Shimon and Levi, right.
Shimon and Levi, they were the ones who did it, right. And, but you know, you could give a marshal. Don't we still blame Nazi Germany? Hitler and his gang, right? They enticed the entire people in order to act like a bunch of murderers and savages and everything else against our people. So you could argue the same thing. I mean, why should all the Germans suffer and so on? But the truth of the matter is that to a certain extent, the curse of Nazism is something which they all share with.
And they still have it there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no question about that.
That's why you say the only good German is the dead one.
Right. Well, wouldn't want to say that.
No.
It's interesting that Simon Wiesenthal came out to speak on behalf of Austria. You'd think that he had enough of Austria, but you know, he lives in Vienna and he likes it over there.
By the way.
So, yeah. We learned 2 weeks ago, as I say, I'll go over briefly again what we did at that particular point and then continue. All right, so I'd like to start again from the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Echad Mashuach B'Shem Namishcha, V'Echad Hamru B'Godem, V'Echad Shavah Mimshiku. So, Matsirin is a Ritzeach. Okay. What the Mishnah is saying is that historically there were three different types of Kahanim Gedolim, okay? One Kohen Gadol is the one who was anointed with the Shemen HaMishcha. That, of course, was true throughout the days, from the time of Aaron HaKohen right until the time of Yoshiyahu, HaMelech Yoshiyahu, at which time they buried the Shemen HaMishcha. Okay? So, to be a Kohen Gadol, he had to be anointed with pure olive oil, in order to be... To be given, shall we say, the status of being the Kohen Gadol. Okay? So here's the first one who is mentioned, the Mashuach B'Shem Namishcha. The Echad, Hamarub B'Godim. What happened afterwards? So the answer is that subsequently the Kohen Gadol was never anointed with the Shem Namishcha because it no longer existed since it had been buried. But, nevertheless, how did they distinguish between Kohen Gadol and what we call a Kohen Hedyot, in other words, the ordinary Kohen? In that, as the Torah specifies, the ordinary Kohen has to wear 4 different garments that are connected with being a Kohen. It's what we call the Big Day Kohuna. And the Kohen Gadol had to wear 8. When I say, wear, of course, it's not just a question of wearing a garment. because one of the things that the Kohen Gadol wore was, for example, the tzitz, which was like a gold plate upon his mitre, upon the head gear that he was wearing, and upon it were written the words Kodesh Lad Hashem. And this was in order to be, as the Talmud says, Meratze. It was to atone for any sacrifices that perhaps there was something wrong with the sacrifice itself. So because the Kohen Gadol had this, so automatically it meant that the sacrifice was made kosher. Okay? So that this was, of course, we're talking about the Korban HaTzibur. We're not talking about private sacrifices where it could be a different problem. However, we'll also see that there are other problems connected. Another thing, for example, that the Kohen Gadol had to wear would be the Choshen Mishpat. You know, he had a special breastplate, right, with the precious stones and everything else. So that he was dressed, more beautifully, more elaborately, and so on than the ordinary Kohanim. Of course, we also know that the average Kohen, what kind of garments did he wear when he officiated? The answer is he wore white garments, okay? Kohen Gadol, on the other hand, had two different sets for Yom Kippur. He had one set of white garments that he had to wear, plain, pure, linen garments, and so that it was. And on the other hand, the Kohen Gadol also had garments with gold threaded in them. So you call it the Big Day Zohar. And that he used for certain parts of the service on Yom Kippur, for example. The Korban HaTzibur, those, he had to officiate with that. With other things, he had to officiate with white. And so the Gemara and Yomar discusses the various changes of garments that he had to undergo, and also the time that, when he had to change from one outfit to another. So also he had to be toivel, after the dip into the, go into the mikveh that they had over there. And at other times he had to have what they call kiddush yadayim v'raglayim. In other words, in between one phase of the service and another, he had to wash his hands and his feet and so on. All right. So he is the merubeh begodim. He is the Kohen Gadol. And then there's another possibility, and that is a Kohen Gadol who is appointed temporarily, as we read in Rashi 2 weeks ago, because the Kohen Gadol was unable to officiate. Lahadil, let's say if the Pope
he got sick.
Right, he gets so sick that he cannot officiate, so obviously somebody else will have to officiate in his place, right? But what would happen if the Kohen Gadol himself was unable to officiate? And of course, what could disqualify him? Even if he had, for example, the seminal omission. After all, he was a married man and everything else. What if he had a seminal omission? In that case, he also was not allowed to officiate until he had immersed himself in the mikveh. Okay, so that being the case, who would be a Kohen Gadol in his place? So the answer is they took one of the other Kohanim and they made him into a Kohen Gadol. Now what happened when the Kohen Gadol was able to return to his duties? So the answer is, so the other guy was
demoted,
but at the same time, once a Kohen Gadol, you're a Kohen Gadol. Okay, so that this is what they say. This is, the Echot She'ova Mimshichuso. In other words, one who had literally gone away from the state of being an anointed Kohen Gadol. At any rate, whether it's one type of a Kohen Gadol, or another type of Gadol, or a third type of Gadol, Machzirin
is
Retzeach.
With their death. This is Rashi, but Rashi is sort of adding an extra step that you don't really see the necessity of, right? Why can't it be the first Kohen Gadol during the time when he was Pasul? That's Ober Mim Shikuso also. During the time.
Yeah, you are right. And I don't disagree with you.
He has to add the extra step that he returns to his status.
Right.
And the one who had stepped up steps down again, and that's the one who's Ober Mim Shikuso.
Right, correct. This is true.
What's he telling you?
Yeah, okay, this is true.
Rashi doesn't say it unless he sees a need for it. Right?
This is correct. All right. As you can see over there, he says, "The Ve'echad Shavah Mishum." So he says, "You are psul b'Kohen Gadol." All right. First of all, something happened. The Shimesh Achetachta, right? The other guy went. Ukshan Israpi Kohen. So then the Chosal Beda Sol, right? He returns to his Beda. The Yovar Zeh, and the other guy, in other words, the one who was appointed a temporary Kohen Gadol. So he loses the temporary status of being a Kohen Gadol. But nevertheless, he still has already all the honors and the perquisites of being a Kohen Gadol in this respect. That if a Rotzeach is in the year HaMiklot, and then the Kohen Gadol dies, even if it were only the Kohen She'ovah Memshich Huso, so nevertheless, with his death, the Rotzeach would be able to leave the year HaMiklot and return home.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what it is. But I agree with you that it could have been, I mean, I'm really of double mind also as to what does it mean of Avam Shekh Huso.
Mm-hmm.
It could also refer to the Kohen during the time that he's in the period that he can't do anything.
It's a bigger chiddush to add
right.
that the one who is only a temporary Kohen,
yes.
even when he dies,
right.
after his X minutes, his 15 minutes of fame
yes.
in the Warhol-esque tradition.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
You mean it was more worthy at the time that the original Kohen died than the one who took his place?
Well, this you could argue, but the point that the Mishnah is making is it wouldn't make any difference.
I mean, each
of them has the status of being a Kohen Gadol.
A
Kohen Gadol who was a Kohen Gadol already retains a certain amount of Kedusha. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Rabbi Yehuda Meir. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Af b'shuach milchoma machzir zateach." He says that even the Kohen who is appointed to serve as the chief chaplain in the army, you know, even as we learn, you know, in Parsha, at the end of Parsha Shoftim over there, when they speak about, you know, going to war, that the Kohen then speaks to the people and he has to say different things to them, as for example, if anybody, you know, has married within the year and hasn't had a chance yet, you know, to live at least 1 year with his wife, go home. If you have a brand new field and so on and so
right.
forth, you haven't had a chance to
a new house.
Right, so right, built a new home, go home. And of course, the worst thing is, you know, whoever is fearful,
who's afraid,
right? So
home.
Let him go home, so that the others shouldn't catch the contagion of being afraid from him. So this is. You know, this is his function. So, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if he should die, after all, he also had a special appointment, so with his death too, the manslayer, you know, would be able to return home. So, at any rate, of course, we'll see that Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is not accepted when we take a look at the Gemara, but nevertheless, he's entitled to his opinion too. At any rate, the Mishnah concludes by saying, "Lefichoch." Therefore, he says, "Yemaseihun shel kehanim," the mothers of the kehanim, of course, meaning, you know, the kehanim gedolim, "Misapkes lehem michyoch sus." They would supply food and raiment to the people in the ir hamiklot. You know, the slayers over there, kedesh rispalu al b'nehem shemusus, so that they would not pray. That the sons of you know these mothers, in other words, that the Kehanim Gedolim
should die.
Right. So now Gemara first of all wants to find out why the three that were mentioned first in the Mishnah, Menoah Hanimili. How do we know these things? I mean that any one of those three categories of Kohen Gadol would automatically allow the you know the slayer to go home should they die. So the answer is Omer Rav Kana. Rav Kana said Omer Kro. You find in the pasuk, you know, speaking about the Orei Miklot, it says V'yosha Boat Mois Hakohen HaGadol. That's one pasuk. In other words, the slayer is to dwell there until the death of the Kohen Gadol. Uchsev. Another pasuk says Ki V'yid Mikloto Yeshev. He's to dwell in the city of his refuge Ad Mois Hakohen HaGadol. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then Uchsev, the third pasuk says, after the death of the Kohen Gadol. All right. Now, how about Rabbi Yehuda, who said, you know, about Meshuach Mulchoma too? So he says, well, Ksiv, because there's another pasuk. The pasuk says, Ksiv Kroach Reino. There's another pasuk which says, Lo Shuv, he's to return, Lo Sheves Bo'oretz, right, to dwell in the land at Mois HaKohen. In other words, it means that he has, at Mois HaKohen, excuse me. At Mois HaKohen, until the death of the Kohen, so that the manslayer, you know, he is to return to the Ir Miklot after being judged, because remember we spoke before, you know, that he is to be escorted first to place where the Bezdin is, and the Bezdin determines, you know, that he deserves Golas, right? And then he's escorted back again over there to the Ir Miklat. So this is what they're referring to, that he's to return in order to dwell in the land, namely in the Ir Miklat, Ad Mois HaKohen. But how about the others who did not mention it in the Mishnah? He says, V'yidoch, the others, Mindalok Ksiv HaGodol, Chad Meharachu. Since the word HaGodol is not found over here, Ad Mois HaKohen, in this particular Pasuk, right? So therefore it means simply with the death of one of the others that we have already mentioned, namely the the Meruvim Begodim, or the Mishuach Bishana Mishcho, or Sheova Mifshikusam. Alright, then they are now analyzing the Tichoch in Meisehen Shel Kohanim. Therefore the mothers of the Kohanim, you know, would supply food and raiment and so on, so that they shouldn't pray for the death of their sons. Talmud Oy Matzah. So you say the reason why they did is that they should not pray. In other words, the slayers should not pray for the death of the Kohen Gadol, right? Or Matzlo Maisei. So now the Gemara asks a simple question, namely, and if they pray, does it mean that automatically the Kohen Gadol is going to die because these guys pray for their death? The hawks here, it's written, Kitzipor Lanud, just like a bird wanders about, Kidro La'ulf, or even like a swallow flies away, Kain kilalas chinam. So likewise is a curse which is pronounced without any good reason. This is what chinam means over here, without any reason whatever. Loi sovo, it will not happen. That's all. It's like the fleeting bird, so it has no effect. Can you find a fleeting bird? No. So therefore, a klola, which is chinam, so also it has no effect whatever. So Omar Ahu sovo ben pirkei devavo shmiyali. So a certain old scholar said, you know what, at the Academy of Rava, when I was listening to Rava, you know, explaining the, you know, this particular inyan, so Shemildi says, I heard Shehoyel ahead lebakshishvachin al doiron velebishu, says the Kehanim, Gedolim should have asked for mercy for their generation. In other words, you should have prayed to God that, you know, things like this should not happen, that people should not be killed, even accidentally, and they didn't do it. And that's the reason why the freedom of the Kohen, of the manslayer is going to be dependent upon the Kohen Gadol, and this is why we want to avert, you know, the prayer for them, because obviously the implication is that even though we said that they wouldn't die, and you know, that this is what it is, but nevertheless, it is a reflection. And we never know, you know, when something, you know, said without any reason whatever could still have some sort of an effect. This is the point of the saying. Okay? The Yikodamaste, and there are those who learned the same thing in a slightly different way. It says, Kadesha Yispalul al Benehim Shaloya Musum. It said that the reason why the women, why the mothers of the Kehanim Gedolim would supply the slayers, you know, with food and drink and garments that they wear and so on, is that they themselves, that the slayers, should pray on behalf. They should be so kindly disposed that they will also pray on behalf of the sons, or the behalf of the Kehanim Gedolim. Tam or the Matzlu, but again they ask the same question. Is the reason that they should pray, Holy Matzlu, I say, and what if the slayers did not pray, then would the Kehanim Gedolim die? My Havalel Mebet, after all, what should the Kohen Gadol have done? Meaning what? Meaning, look, how was the Kohen Gadol responsible for the death which was caused by somebody accidentally, right? So, how come, in other words, the question that they're going to ask right now is, how come that somebody does wrong and somebody else gets the punishment for it? So it says, Hocha Amrinon, here, meaning in Eretz, in Babylonia, we have a saying. What is the saying? We say as follows, that Tuvio Choto Vizugid Mangin. That Tuvia is the one who sins, and Zigit is the one who gets the malchus. Okay? And I explained to you, remember, 2 weeks ago, but, you know, for the sake of those who weren't here, this is the Gemara in Arvei Pesachim, in the last chapter of Pesachim. where they tell the story that there was a guy by the name of Tuvia who did something that was not right. And he deserved Malchus for doing it. But there was only one witness. And who was the witness? The witness was Zigut. So they came before a puppet. My puppet said, I'm sorry, he says, my verdict is that Zigut is the guy who deserves the Malchus. Why? Because he came to testify against somebody who would have been punished with Malchus, but he was an only witness. And as an only witness, it amounts to being like a Motzi Shem Ra. That's what it boils down to. In other words, you're only, you know, saying something against, blackening the character of another person. Unless you could prove it with two witnesses, then it has no value. And therefore, because you blacken the character of a person without having a corroborative witness, therefore you're the one who gets the Malchus. So it became a proverb in Babylonia that Tuvia Chota, Tuvia is the one who did the sinning, and yet at the same time, who got the Malchus?
Zigun.
It was Zigun, right. So that was the proverb in Babylonia. Chosam, meaning there in Eretz Yisrael, they had a different version of the same idea. Amre, there they say, Shechem Nosiv Mavgai Gazir. This is what we heard a discussion on in the tape. Namely, Shechem, who was the son of Hamor, and of course, you know, he was the prince in the city of Shechem, which is going to the Arabs again today. You saw, you know, Ramallah once more. I mean, well, Shechem is Nablus, all right. Nablus went already, yes. Now Ramallah went. But the reason why I coupled them is because you have to go through Ramallah in order to get to Shechem. These are all cities directly north of Yerushalayim. So, at any rate, Nasib, in other words, he's the one who took Dina and he had a good time with her, right? The mob guy, who is your ordinary citizen of Shechem, what about him? He says, Gozi, he's the one who had to have his penis cut. In other words, he had to be circumcised. Because if you remember, the terms that Shimon and Levi laid down, you know, in general, actually, it was the brothers of Dina, right? They said that it's a harp and a shanda. We cannot give our daughter to a person who is uncircumcised. And if you want to make peace with us, then everybody in town has to become circumcised. So poor mob guy, whoever he may be, he was the one who was circumcised. But the only one who got the pleasure out of the business was Shechem.
Well, wasn't Shechem, but he was...
Yeah, he was also killed, of course. But we're talking only about temporarily. Omar Husofta, so again, the elderly scholar said Mipirkei Devava that in Rava's academy, in Rava's lectures, Shemi Ali, I heard as well as the Shehoya, Lahen, Lavakishrak, Nadeiron, Belay Bikshon. Okay. Kehahor, and he gives an example this time. What he adds is, you know, another example. What is it? Kehoda Ahu Gabro. There was a lion who devoured a person, a man, at a distance of three parasangs. Parasangs is roughly, let's say, about 3-4 miles, or maybe 5 miles, okay? So let's say within a 15-mile radius, okay? Within the 15-mile radius of where Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was, and the prophet Elijah, who was normally he would come and he would schmooze together with Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, who was one of his favorites, he refused to speak to him for 3 days because he was angry. And of course, what is the idea? Why was he angry with him? Because, in other words, he felt that Rabbi Shimon ben Levi should have prayed that there should not have been any lions attacking human beings in the area over there. So in other words, he held him responsible. It's the same idea, Shehoya Lulavakish, Rachmi Maldoro. Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav. So Rav Yehuda said, the name of Rav, he says, Kilalas Chocham, a curse pronounced by a Chocham, Afila Bechina, even if there is no reason for it, he bought. Something is going to happen. There is a result. Minalon, how do we know this? He says, Mi'achitofel. This we know from the story of David and Achitophel. And what incident are we talking about? So the Gemara says, Shevishah Shekorah David Shisin, at the time when David started to dig foundations for the Beis HaMikdash, for the future Beis HaMikdash. Of course, we know that the Shlomo HaMelech who built, but nevertheless, the start was already given in the day of David. The days of David. David actually wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash, but if you remember, why didn't he go ahead with the plan eventually? Because the prophet Samuel came to him and said to him, not the prophet, your hands have spilled blood, and the Rabbeinu Shalom doesn't want, you know, somebody who has spilled blood to build a house which is to be a house of peace, you see. So that this is the basic idea. But David already started in to lay the foundations and to dig foundations for the future Beis HaMikdash. And what happened at this point? So the Gemara says, Kafa Tahoma, the waters of the deep, Kafa. Rashi explains the word Kafa as being in the sense that it floated up. But you can say, you know, it began to rise like in a torrent. I mean, to get a better picture of what was happening over here.
He had a spring.
Yes, right. Okay, so it started to rise like in a torrent. So Bola Mishtafe, the Alma, not only that, but the Tahom, the deep, wanted to actually flood the world. This is how hard it was gushing forth. So Omar, so David said, Ma'u lichtav shema chaspa, maybe I should write the divine name, you know, the Yud Kei Vav Kei, write it on a shard, U'mishto b'tayman, and I'll throw it into the Tahom, the liku aduchte, so that it should stay still in its place. In other words, it shouldn't go any further, but go back again, you know, to where it came from. So leku di amalei midi, nobody answered him at all. Whatever chachomim he consulted was silent. Omar, so then he said, kol hayadeya dover zeh, teyenu oimro, yechonek begrono. He says, whoever knows the answer to this particular problem, and he does not say, you know, what the answer should be, let him be literally choked in his throat. In other words, let him suffer, you know, strangulation. Okay? Nos Achitophel Kal V'Chomer Yatzma. So Achitophel then applied the principle of Kal V'Chomer for himself. Omar, he said, Ma'alas of Shalom Ben Ishla Ishto Omra HaTorah Shemi Shenichta Bikdusha Yimuchel Abayim. You know, in the Parsha Sota, where we have the problem, you know, of a man who suspects his wife that she was unfaithful to him, and he's warned her, and still she defies his warning, right, and so on. So what happens? So he takes her to the Beis HaMikdash, right? And then what happens over there?
They give her the bit of water.
Right, they give her the water. But what do they have to do? They have to take this water and take a scroll upon which the words of the parsha are written, and it is erased by the mayim, you know, by the water, and then the woman has to drink this water. So the idea then in Gemara Sota is why? Because the Rabbeinu Shalom says it is better that my name be erased from a holy parchment, even though normally we know that it is prohibited, you know, to erase God's name. Chas v'shalom, right? That's why we have Shemus over here, you know.
Right.
So, but for the sake of peace between man and woman, if this will enable the woman, you know, to prove her innocence, then in that particular case, it's better that my name be erased. Okay. So, Achitophel said, then, okay, now in order to create peace between man and wife, the Torah said, let my name, which has been written in holiness, be erased with water. So the chol ho'elam kulei lekol shekein, then in order to try to save the entire world, all the more reason. So in that case, he said, okay, then in that case I must give an answer in order to save the world. So omalei, so he said unto David, he said to him, sorry, it is permitted to to take a shard, write God's name on it, and then throw it in. So Kotav Shema Chaspo, so David HaMelech wrote the divine name on a shard, and Shadei Atahoman, he threw it into the deep, and Nochas become Adukte, and then it descended. In other words, the water went down and settled in the place where it belonged. So, ganz gut. But Vapilo Hochi, but nevertheless, in spite of this, Kasiv, then we read subsequently, Vachitofil Ra'o Kilo Nesesatsa So, that Achitofel saw that his advice was not taken. Of course, here, this is a later incident that we read in the story of David and Achitofel. If you remember, David had a son, Avshalom. Mm-hmm. And this Avshalom wanted to usurp the kingdom, and he was ready to kill his father. And he had succeeded in getting the support of some of the most prominent people, including Achitofel, who was considered the main counselor of King David. Mm. And there was a question, how best to conquer David? This was the question. And there were two differences of opinion. Because one of them said, look, David is such a great and mighty hero that you cannot conquer him, except through tremendous force and things like that. The other one said, no, David right now is very weak. This is Achitofel's opinion. He says, David is weak. This is the time to strike right now. But the others happened to carry the day with Avshalom, and as a result, Achitofel saw that his advice was not taken. So this is what it says, right? So what did he do? So he saddled his donkey, and then he rode, they went home, Eli rode to his city, and he gave last will and testament to his household, and he strangled himself. In other words, he hanged himself. Okay? He committed suicide. Hmm. So, what do we see? We see that even though King David said that if anybody refuses to say anything, then in that case, may he choke to death, and still Achitofel came and he gave the right answer to King David, but nevertheless, there is something in the curse of a chacham, after all, King David obviously was a chacham, that, has an effect even beyond that which we would expect. Omer Rabbi Abohu said, Kilalas chacham, al pilut al tenai hibo, says that the curse that a chacham pronounces, even if it is only on condition that, if it happens, then this curse will take effect. But if it doesn't happen, then it's to be of no effect. Nevertheless, he bought. It could still have an effect. Min Alon, how do we know? So he says, we know this from the story of Eli. Do you remember who Eli was? Eli was the high priest in Shiloh. This was before the Beis HaMikdash was built, of course. And at that particular time, we learned that, he had taken under his wing Shmuel. If you remember, Shmuel's mother had brought him that, he should be brought up in the Beis Hashem, right, in Shiloh. And then we had the famous incident where Shmuel has a bad dream, right? He wakes up in the middle of the night. And he says, Eli, Eli, Eli says, did you call me my son, and so on? And so tell me what's wrong. So that happened first, twice, three times, and then he said to him, you must tell me, what it is, right? And what did he say to Shmuel? He said to him, Koyase lechorekim v'chol Yosef, says, may God do this unto you, or may he do even more. In other words, may God punish you, right? Im techachid meni dovar, if you would hide anything from me. In other words, I adjure you that you must tell me exactly what it is that you saw in the dream. V'yafal gav dechsiv, and even though it is written subsequently, what? V'yagid lo Shmuel eskolad borim, that Shmuel told him everything, v'lo chichet bimenu, and he didn't conceal anything from him. Nevertheless, what do we find? Kesiv, that we find a pasuk afterwards which says, that his sons, meaning Shmuel's sons, did not follow in his footsteps. He didn't have nachas on his kid, right? So, in other words, even though the Tanai had been fulfilled in that he told Eli exactly what had happened, but nevertheless, the fact that Eli had said, a klala, may it take effect, may it happen, means that in this particular case, the punishment was, the klala was, that he did not have the nachas from children that he should have had. Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav. So Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav that nidui al tnai tzor chapora. He says, if a person says, may I be excommunicated if I don't do this or that, then in that particular case, you have to go to the chacham, you have to go to the Bezdin and have that nidui annulled, because otherwise it takes effect, even though, okay? And he says, Ben Alon, how do we know this? He says, Mi Yehuda. We learned this from Yehuda. Dichsiv, it's written over there, Im lo havi yosiv eilecho, right? Yehuda argues with his father. And he says, look, let Binyamin go together with me down to Egypt, right? And father, he says, if I do not bring him back to you, then I will be a sinner unto you all the days of my life. In other words, let me suffer, all the days of my life from the feeling, that I have sinned. The Omer Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, and Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni said, Omer Rav Yonason, my dear Siv, what is the meaning of the Pasuk? This, of course, is in Vezos HaBrocha, where it says, Yechi Ruvain v'ayumos, may Ruvain live and not die. And then it says, V'zois lo Yehuda. And right after that, the next verse is, and this is what Moshe said concerning Yehuda. So, Kol Oysen Nem Shona, all those 40 years, Sheho Yisrael Bamidbar, that the people of Israel were in the wilderness, Atzmaisav Shel Yehuda Yemugulgulin Be'orei. So the bones of Yehuda were being knocked around in the coffin in which he was being carried. Ad she'omad Moshe uvikei shelo v'rachmin, until Moshe Rabbeinu finally arose and begged for mercy for Yehuda. Omar Afonov, and he said, Rabbeinu shelolam, mi goram l'reuven sheyoide Yehuda. He said, Rabbeinu Shalom, after all, why did Reuven finally confess that he too was wrong in what he had done? Of course, the reference over here, what was the wrong that that Reuven had done? Of course, he could say there are many things. For one of things, we learned in Gemara and Tainus, he might have tried a little bit harder to do what?
To stop the right, Joseph from being
killed. Exactly, to save Joseph from being killed by the brothers, right?
Walk away and come back?
Yes. And the Gemara in Tainus, if you remember, it says over there, that if he had realized, that this event would be marked down and so on, he certainly would have tried a lot harder, in order to try to save his
body.
Yeah, Shimon was the major one. That's the reason why he was held in Egypt as a hostage, right? Well, he could say it was Shimon and Levi, but the point is, Shimon, after all, was... next in line after Reuven, so obviously he was he had more authority, than Levi. And also at the same time, they wanted to try to save Levi's reputation a little bit. After all, the future, Kahanim, Levim would come out of Levi. So Shimon was the guy. Okay? But at any rate, Reuven committed another sin. What is the sin? It's written, if you remember, that after the death of Rachel, that, he went, literally it says that he slept, with Bilhah, right? The Pelegesh, in other words, the concubine, right? But the Chazal say, that he didn't actually sleep with her, but instead he messed up the bed because he was jealous that his father Yaakov was now sleeping with Bilhah, because of the fact that, you know, that in other words, he was showing preference to Bilhah instead of showing preference to Leah. After all, Leah was a principal wife, and the other one was Pelegish. But because Bilhah was the Pelegish of Rachel, so this is the reason why. Okay, and you know, he did wrong in doing what he did. So the question is, who eventually persuaded Reuven that he should confess that he had done wrong? So the answer is Yehuda. How do we know? Because if you remember, first we said Yechivo V'Yomos, right? And then it says V'Zos LeYehuda, right? And this is as far as Yehuda. What does it say? Shema Ad Hashem Kol Yehuda, right? Listen, O Lord, unto the voice of Yehuda. So, inasmuch as Yehuda was being punished because of the fact that he was also under a ban from his father, right? The father said, "You got to, you know, why did you bring me so much sorrows and so on?" And he says, "You know, if I don't, I'll bring it back to you, and if not, I will be a sinner all the days of my life." So this was his punishment too. It took effect, and because it took effect, what was the punishment that he had to suffer? That his bones did not have any menucha during the time that they were being carried. So now we know that not only Yosef's bones were being carried back to Eretz Israel, but Yehuda's too. And according to another tradition, there's a medrash that says that, you know, all the ancestors, you know, the 12 Shvatim, they were carried back. But Yehuda's, you know, the bones were rolling around. So, since they were rolling around, obviously they became disjointed one from another. And what happened? So we find that Moshe Rabbeinu has to pray on behalf of Yehuda. He says, "Right, Shema Hashem, call Yehuda, please listen to the voice of Yehuda." So, O'al Evrei Leshofa. The result was that the Evorim, in other words, the various limbs, they came back again, Leshofa, into the sockets from which they had become dislocated. Okay?
Any idea what the last word is?
What, Shofa?
Eishleish, can you figure it out? How are you with the Rashi's laws?
Oh.
Any ideas in this one?
Well, we'll take a look and we'll see. Okay. As we say, shildon kayam. In other words, the skeleton, the shelad over here means the skeleton. The skeleton remained, the shel Yehuda, but, you know, Yehuda's skeleton, migul golin. In other words, the bones were rolling around and, you know, they were dislocated. So, Omar Loshan Zeh, that's the reason why he said, Yechiv Reuven Kolomer, Reuven Shildo Kayemis, right? His skeleton is whole. Ki Ilu Hu Chai. So, it's as if he is alive right now.